Hi, everybody. This is Armand Demel with you with The Positive Mind. Here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Trouble with friends. Friendship is a very difficult thing. Friendship is a difficult thing in general. Friends, lovers, associations, relationships. It's tough. It's not easy. Let's go back to Greece for a moment. Those of you who love Greece, Cassandra. Now, how many of you know a Cassandra in your life? Cassandra was usually the character we would think of when we would think of an ancient Greek literature. We'd think of the person who was always bearing bad news. We say, oh, that's like a Cassandra kind of person. But this, we've later learned, is not fair. Cassandra, whose name also was Alexandra, so any Alexandras out there, of which there are many nowadays, who are, you're also Cassandra, according to Greece. Now, Cassandra had a thing. She was blessed as a beautiful young woman with the gift of prophecy. Cassandra had the ability to tell you what was going to happen. She'd know when there's going to be a shipwreck. She'd know when there's going to be an earthquake. She'd know when things were going to happen. But, you know, Apollo was interested in her, and she shunned Apollo. So Apollo put a little twist to her gift. Apollo, at the last minute, added a twist, and the twist was she was doomed to always tell the truth, but never to be believed. So here she was, somebody who had prophecy, but no one would ever believe her. Did you ever feel that way about your mother? She's telling you, you know what's going to happen now. Here's a disaster. Oh, look at this terrible thing is going to happen to you. Or your father who warns you, don't wear that skirt if you're going out, because this is going to happen. You know, prophecy, right? And you don't believe them, because they're prophets of doom. And you don't believe them. Now, some people earn that title. Poor Cassandra. She didn't earn that title, and she was, she's not what people thought she was. She eventually was killed by Agamemnon's wife, Clytemnestra, just in case you're curious as to what happened to her. But anyway, back to the story. So Cassandra was a news giver. She gave honest news, but nobody believed her. Doesn't that sound like a lot of people you believe today? You know, you watch commercials on television, and here's somebody giving you a commercial. You eat this product, and you are going to thrive. You drink this juice, and you're going to have antioxidants up the giggy. You, and thousands of things that you keep reading about. You drive this car, and you'll never have to crush your dummy. There are things that you're being told that through advertising that you just don't believe. How Cassandra of them. They're telling you things that may even be true, but you've just learned to doubt. Not only do you wind up doubting them, but you doubt everybody after a while. You doubt all the commercials. You even doubt your physicians. Does your physician ever tell you the truth? You know, the physician says to you, you know, well, I always thought you should have done so and so, but he never told you. Does your hairdresser tell you the truth? You know, they don't want to offend you. They don't want to lose business. Who tells you the truth? So maybe you hope that you have a mate that tells you the truth. But then again, you know, I don't know if you want your mate to tell you the truth. Like your mate should tell you, he should come home and say to you, you know, I saw this girl at the office today. Boy, was I tempted to go to bed with her. But I didn't. You don't want him telling you that truth. Shut up, honey. Don't bring that to me. So many of us claim that we want truth from people, but most of us do things not to get it. Now, when is it that truth is important? And this is what we decided to do our program about today. In the studio with me is physician Sherry Siegel and psychotherapist Catherine Altieri. we've been talking about and researching the idea of telling people things that are unpleasant and what that's like for you to deliver something that's unpleasant to somebody you care about. What are the rules? What are the reactions? To use it as a small example, I'm going to use one of the simple ones that happen, you know, that happen to people like, you've got bad breath. You know, many people out there have bad breath. Bad breath. What? That's even you shouldn't even use the word bad. What makes it bad? You got stinky breath. Stinky meaning that if you ate something and you had a lot of garlic, your breath smells of garlic. Does that make it bad breath? No, it's garlic breath. I just don't like it. I don't like the way it smells. But sometimes people's breath is so foul that you can't stand it. I remember once I was with an elderly couple. This is brutal. I was with a man who had very terrible breath. And his wife happened to chew with her mouth open a lot. So everything she was eating while she was talking, you could see her chewing it. So I was on one side of me was this man with bad breath. So I tried to turn away from him so that I wouldn't be, you know, I didn't want to offend him. And he was an elderly gentleman. And I look at the other side and here's his wife chewing with her mouth open. I just said, well, life is difficult sometimes. But should you tell somebody if they have bad breath? You know, if it's somebody you love. And does bad breath just mean you're neglectful about brushing your teeth? Now, let me just ask you, Sherry, since I've got you here, what could bad breath be an indication of? It could be an indication of a lot of things, right? And welcome sure. to the show, by the way.
Thanks for having me, Armand. It could mean a lot of things. One of them is gum disease. When your gums are not healthy, sometimes the bacteria stay there, and the bacteria cause bad smells or smells that are unpleasant for other people.
Like a cavity will do the same thing.
A cavity, too. It's an infection in the mouth that can also cause an unpleasant odor or an aromatic odor. There are other illnesses, something called ketosis, when you have diabetes or when you're fasting, that also has a particular odor. Actually, it's a fruity odor. More pleasant than unpleasant. But people sometimes can have cancers of the mouth, cancers of the tongue or the throat. Those can also cause unpleasant smells.
And they could all manifest with a bad breath.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So in other words, and you may not be aware of it. So
that's
if
true.
You've got a friend, you got somebody you love who's going to give you some kind of news and say to you, hey, you got bad breath. You know, it's like, you're depending on them to tell you.
Right. It's because it can have consequences if you don't take care of it.
If you don't. So if you don't care about the person, I guess you do nothing. Unless you're trying to show them up or make fun of them, then you might do it. You know, I mean, I know teenagers would do that with each other easily, right? He's got bad breath. You got bad breath. And you kind of laugh at the other kid. But if you have no investment, well, let me think about this, Catherine. Do you think of any time when a person would not have an investment in the other person that they would tell them something bad about themselves, like your fly is open or, you know, you don't look particularly good in the clothing you're wearing?
You might be coming from a hostile point of view. If you want to say something to hurt somebody and you don't have a close caring. If a person wants to hurt somebody and they could come from a hostile position and not one of caring, but that's different than caring for somebody's health.
Okay, so out of hostility, you could sometimes be the bearer of bad news. But now, let's say the news gets more serious. Let's say you have to tell somebody something that's very serious, like, you know, your dog died. I got a call. Your mother just died. You know, what are the guidelines that we have for thinking about what you would tell people? You know what I mean? What are the guidelines we have that would tell people? How do you tell somebody something that they not only don't want to hear, but is a shock to them? So what do you guys think?
Well, I think you take a deep breath, and you look for the right
Who's
situation.
Who's the you in this case?
Well, anybody bringing the unpleasant news would look for the ideal moment, a relaxed time, but that may not be available. If you can't find that right moment, take a deep breath, break into whatever's going on with something like, I need to speak to you, and I'm afraid I can't wait. Look the person in the eye and say, there's no easy way to say this. I'm sorry to have to tell you this. And then tell them the unpleasant news.
Well, that kind of sounds the obvious, right? That's what you would do, right? Break into whatever's going on, because if you sit there and you wait for something, imagine sitting there waiting and knowing something all that time. You know, wait till the end of the movie and then I'll tell you. You know, I like your way.
Well, I liked what you said, Catherine, about taking a deep breath, because it's also the bearer, the Cassandra, who has to suffer the giving of the bad news. So taking care of yourself, taking a deep breath, putting yourself in a place where you're open to hear what the other person has to say,
right,
that's a really good idea.
Because if the deliverer of the unpleasant news is stressed or anxious or unhappy, that's going to be transferred to the person that's on the receiving end. So you don't want to transfer any negative energy. There's enough of that that's going to be brought with the bad news.
I don't think you could help it. I mean, if you're going to feel bad, you're going to feel bad to tell somebody. I would hate to tell somebody their mother died. You know, and we just got news your mother died. You know, I'm going to feel terrible along the way. So there's no rule about, you know, don't be nervous. But I think you bring up a very important point. The Cassandra, the person delivering the news, the messenger, is going to suffer. And that's it. Here's something we don't think of much. We think of the person on the other side of it suffering, right? Now it brings me to some of the practice that I've had and some of the therapy I've done, and I know you've done, Catherine, where you see a client and a client comes to see you, and they look at you and they say, so what do you think, Doc? You think this marriage can be saved? And then you learn that the thing is a totally abusive relationship that doesn't have a chance in hell. And somehow you've got to deliver the news if you want to. Of course, most therapists will avoid it. And we have to talk about that. We have to talk about the pain of delivering the unpleasant reality to someone. Now, and to this, I would go to you, Sherry. Sherry, I go to you because I think of physicians. And I think of physicians, how they never give you the real lowdown if it's very serious. They just don't. They may tell your family, but they don't tell you. They don't come right out and say, wow, this is the worst possible thing that could have happened to you. You know, here it is. It's a disaster. They don't do that. And I think you're part of what you're saying is that you, as let's say you're representing the medical crowd, why won't you tell us the truth?
We've never learned how to tell the truth. Not that we want to lie to people, but no one's ever given us a course to say, here's how to give the bad news. And that nowadays there are some schools starting to give a course like that because it's so very important. If you're in the medical field, this someday you're going to have to deliver some bad news. So it would be tremendously helpful for us to learn how
Wait. I'm not sure, because here you are proselytizing about truth. I'm not sure that it's right. Let's take the system with the way it is. You doctors lie. You lie to your patients. You lie to your patients about the seriousness of stuff, about the amount of information you know. You give them partial truths. Part of it is you don't have the time to give it to them. Second is you don't have the respect to think that the patients might really get something from it and may use the information. So you guys, and I certainly don't mean you, Sherry, but I mean your profession, it is a profession of people who don't tell the truth. Now, maybe that's the way it's supposed to be. I'm not going to go stand on a soapbox and say doctors should tell the truth, because maybe they're not supposed to. Maybe they're supposed to be the liars, and maybe they give you minimal news, and then the patients go find out for themselves what they're supposed to find out. So I'm not sure. I'm not going to stand up, because I do know one thing for true, for sure. You don't get the truth. You don't get the truth from your stockbroker. You don't get the truth from your banker. You don't get the truth from your doctors. You just don't get the truth. Maybe you're not supposed to. Do you know what I mean? Maybe your job as a physician is not to have to suffer the delivery of the bad news. Because let's talk about the reactions that people could have. What reactions have you seen people have to very serious negative medical news?
Some people have been shocked and surprised. Others have been afraid or angry. Some people deny it. They just don't believe it could possibly happen to them. Some people have been ill for so long that they're actually relieved to hear there's a name for what's going on.
Can we go through that a little slower? That's very, very important stuff you're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go for the beginning. Let's go for the first one you said.
I said surprise or shock.
So one of the things that happen when you tell somebody, hey, I just found out this thing about you. You've got typhoid fever. What? Huh? Where did I get that from?
It's a surprise. It's something completely out of left field. People often don't have the information, as Catherine was saying earlier before the show began, without that information, well, what is typhoid fever? What can I do about it? What's it going to mean to my life? It takes somebody off guard, and it turns the world around.
Now, there are certain people I know who always respond to any news like deer in headlights, that they always have a surprise. So maybe this is a little, as well as it could be character dependent, you know what I mean? It could just be that there are certain people who are always going to be shocked, right? There's kind of an awe. Part of the reason that the our beautiful president from the last regime said that he was going to go into Iraq and said we were going to hit them with shock and awe, because the awe would paralyze them, meaning that awe is a tool for paralysis. Once a person gets that awe that passes, once they get rid of that past, then they have to deal with a number of different things. So besides surprise, right, now reality hits in. Reality of what you're saying. And you're saying some people deny it. What would that, how would it manifest if you told somebody something seriously bad about them, like they have beriberi, you know?
They might say to me, that can't possibly be true. I'm so healthy. Look at me. I eat right. I run every day. I do all sorts of exercise. How could I possibly have that?
So that's the denial.
Yes.
The denial is it just won't happen. It can't happen to me. It
can't happen. Can't happen to me. Sometimes young people have the idea that they're invincible. They believe some people might get an illness or some people might die, but it won't happen to me because I'm safe and I'm invincible.
As a neurologist, let me ask you something. Is there ever any very, very, very serious news you have to deliver?
Certainly delivering the news that someone has had a stroke was a challenge for me.
You mean telling them you had a stroke?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it's.
I mean, don't people know that as soon as they have it, that they had a stroke?
Most people don't know that. They know something's wrong.
They wind up in the hospital, but if they're laying in bed, doesn't the nurse say you had a stroke?
They say that the nurse might come over and say, we'll have the doctor see you, the neurologist will examine you. But often they don't make a diagnosis before the consulting physician says something.
So then you tell somebody they had a stroke, and I guess the first thing they're worried about is, am I going to get paralyzed? Am I going to be unable to do something? What's it going to take away my capacity? Am I not going to be able to play soccer? What's it?
Exactly.
Is that the fear that comes
All up? Those fears. And can it get better? The good news about strokes is that most strokes do get better.
All right. And the other, what other kind of news do you have to deliver to people that's very, very difficult? I guess the aging ones, the Alzheimer's, must be the toughest.
It's hard for people to hear that they have a progressive illness such as Alzheimer's or Parkinson's disease. People are fearful. People without the information feel that they don't have power over this illness. And it's the lack of information and the lack of power that they feel that puts them into that unknown. And people are so uncomfortable in that place of not knowing.
If I were a patient And I had anybody in the world to tell me these things about me. I would like it to be you, Sherry, because I know what you would do and the way you would deliver it is with truth and with support, but not with minimizing, right? And not with denial. Oh. You would show me your compassion and you would tell me the truth, wouldn't you?
That would be my goal, and minimizing an illness by saying, oh, it's a stroke, it's just a little stroke, or it's not so bad, it'll get better. I would never want to mislead someone because I don't know the future. Unlike Cassandra, I don't have a crystal ball or able to look into the future. I can say, here's what is, and many people get better, and here are some of the things we can do to help the situation, and here's information for you.
We're talking about the different stages that a person goes through when they hear news that is not necessarily favorable. You're going to say, Catherine?
Yes, Armand, the initial phase for the person being diagnosed is one of a feeling of extreme loss, of a loss of health, a loss of well-being. And that creates a sadness, a grief, and it's a particular kind of a loss. It's an ambiguous loss because they don't know in that initial diagnostic stage what exactly they're losing. So there's a lot of confusion, and it's kind of the beginning of a process, of an education process for them. But I think it's the most frightful for them, the not knowing, and maybe thinking the worst. Brings a lot of anxiety. So through education, though, through speaking more with the doctor, maybe doing some research on their own, maybe speaking with more than one doctor, can be helpful and can relieve that kind of anxiety based on not knowing and what's going to happen, what will the future bring, because the doctor may not even know what the ultimate prognosis is.
I understand, and thank you. You know, Sherry, the problem that I have with this very often is if you tell somebody that they've got a series of illnesses, and these illnesses are very severe, like you've got, what's the most severe of the cancers? Bone cancer? What could be, what's your killer?
Well, brain, I think as a neurologist, I think brain cancer is very severe.
Brain cancer, right. Yes. There's certain ones you just can't get over, right? You're not going to get past it. You're going to try your best, but odds are you're not coming out of it. Which are the ones?
Well, like Senator Kennedy had, his type of brain cancer.
See, I'm doing the thing to you now. I'm doing the thing where I'm asking you to tell the truth. Which cancer, leukemia, which cancer has the worst prognosis?
In my opinion, it's an opinion, it's certainly not a fact, but in my opinion,
brain cancer is just a killer.
And there are different types of brain cancer. But some are severe.
Okay, the most severe brain cancer.
Yes.
You got a very poor diagnosis, right? Not like Ted Kennedy, I mean, who's got years once he has it. But you could go in a couple of days, you could go in a couple of months, right?
Right, or there are certain vascular events in the brain, like a certain strokes. Last time we talked about plugs and leaks, certain severe leaks where there's a lot of blood that in places where it shouldn't be. Certainly that's a very difficult prognosis. Very
and difficult
prognosis.
Meaning that you're probably going to die.
Yes.
Would you ever say that to a patient? You're probably going to die. See, now here's the thing that we have. The bearers of this news. I can't ever imagine a doctor saying that to somebody. You're probably going to die by next week. They don't do it.
In part because we don't know.
Oh, come on. Sometimes you know.
We can know that the situation is grave, and we can know that there aren't a lot of treatments. But sometimes we're surprised as well. And so we don't always know. That's why I've always tried hard to put information on the table.
Yes, but I'm also saying it is very difficult for you who have to deliver the news, who are, in my eyes, just like the rest of us, we're children. We're children with skills trying to help the other kids. And sometimes it's so tough to tell somebody what's real. So much so that we don't want to suffer delivering the news. We don't want to suffer it, so we don't want to tell them. See, the doctors don't want to tell you. It's like I remember the brokers when people lost their money during this recent crash of the market. You know, the brokers, the way they called up, well, you know, things have kind of gone down. But they never wanted to sell people out because they never wanted them to take losses. And they cost people so much more money that way. There has to be a point where people, I don't know if there has to be a point. Maybe this is just the way it should be. When we come back from our break, we're going to be talking more about this because there are many more elements to it that you, as a partner, as a friend, to someone you love, will learn about, and so that you could be much more helpful to them. And maybe you, as somebody who receives bad news, may be helpful also. But I have to tell you a joke. I need a joke, right? We need a joke. Here, we're talking about such serious stuff. So this First World War, this German pilot, an English pilot, is caught in Germany, and he's in a German hospital. And the doctor goes over to him, and pardon my German accent, and says, we have to remove your right leg. It's got gangrene. I think it's sounding like a Jewish accent, but I'm trying my best. Okay, and so the English pilot says, okay, you can remove my right leg, but you have to do me a favor. You have to fly over England, waving a white flag. They won't shoot at you, and drop my leg on English soil so it can get buried on English soil. And the German doctor says, this we do. Next day, the doctor comes in and says, we got to remove your other leg. Gangrene. And the English pilot says, okay, doc, you can do that, but you have to fly over England with a white flag and drop it on English soil so they could bury it on English soil. And the third day they come in, and guess what? Of course, they say, doctor, mister, you're going to lose your right arm. And he says, it's okay that I got to lose my right arm, but do me a favor. You have to fly over England and put a white flag and then drop it on English soil. So they bury it on English soil. And the German doctor says, this we refuse to do. And he says, you refuse to do? Why do you refuse to do it? He said, because we think you're trying to escape. This is Armand DeMille with you, with a positive mind. Part of what we know about breaking bad news to people is consider what the bad news is. How bad is it? Are you trying to tell someone that their cat died or that you lost your job? You know, what are you afraid of in their reaction? Sometimes you could tell them in front what their reaction is. And, of course, picking your time to tell them is important. Also, what's important is privacy. If you're going to deliver news to somebody, sit down with the person where you can see each other, but not where there's everybody around you. Let that person have the freedom of their emotions. Then wait for their reaction. And this is what we're going to deal with when we come back from our break. Because it's the reaction that can become so painful to deal with. So many times what we want to avoid most is the reaction. We'll also take your calls a little later at 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille with Sherry Siegel and Catherine Altieri. We want to hear from you as well. So we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, a little interesting music, and then we'll continue with this discussion.
Ladies and gentlemen, before you die, please don't listen to those blizzard of lies. My name is Nellie Mackay. You're listening to New York WBAI.
It's that time again.
What time is it?
Time for the CCCP.
The Monthly Laughing Nightmare.
Wednesday, August 26th at 2 p.m.
Cutthroat political satire with Randy Critico, John McDonough, Janet Coleman, David Dozer, Muggy Klingman, Otis McClay, Scooter, Paul Fisher, Mike Sklar, Billionaires for Bush, Steduzo Mbili, The Capital Steps, and The Great Will Durst.
That's Wednesday, August 26th at 2 p.m.
The CCCP.
The Monthly Laughing Nightmare.
Okay, Armand, stand by. Bring it up.
When I wake up in the afternoon, what you please is me to do. Don't nobody bring me no bad news, 'cause I wake up all
I'm the Wiz, original cast recording. Don't nobody bring me no bad news. Well, I just thought it was cute to play that for you. Do you believe I could find music for just about anything? But, you know, when we were off air, Sherry was telling me something that I think is very important. Sherry, go to the other side of this. Go ahead.
Well, what Catherine said before about this being a process, so it's not just an event, the telling of bad news. It becomes a process and a relationship.
It's the beginning of a positive relationship between a medical doctor and the person being diagnosed.
Absolutely. And in reality, if you look at the positive side of giving bad news, if you do it in a skillful manner, you're really helping somebody. You're doing someone a favor by beginning the dialogue and the relationship.
Right. I also want to speak to Sherry's point about not always wanting to bring the ultimate bad news, you know, a negative diagnosis. And that's because doctors don't always want to play God. They don't always want to be the prophets. They don't always want to be the Cassandra. There's not always such a thing as an objective truth. Is that right, Sherry?
That's right. You know, it's always colored by
how... You always hear about patients living longer than their doctors suggested they would. So, really, who are the doctors to say how long a patient has to live?
Yeah, I know. I really understand what you're saying, but I think it's a cop-out. Because doctors know. I mean, most of us know. You know, if you got a... I had a friend of mine, one of my dearest friends. We went to the middle of the night, we went to a hospital, and they gave him a spinal tap, and the doctor said to me, he's got leukemia. And I said to him, how long does he... I mean, how will we treat this? And this doctor, who I was up with at night and who wasn't strong enough to be able to get the bone marrow out of the guy's spine, so I had to help the doctor. I actually was in there digging in my friend's spine, pulling out the marrow, because we had to do it, because we had to find out what was. And the doctor, after I had worked with him over this period of time, turned to me and he said, start preparing yourself for your friend leaving. Because he knew 2 years before it happened that this diagnosis of this kind of leukemia meant most probably fatal stuff. That doctor was honest with me. And I remember I got together with a bunch of other people who were co-workers, and they were all, oh, we're going to give him shiatsu, and we're going to do this, and we're going to make him healthy, and we're going to do this and do this and do this. And I said, but keep in mind, he may leave also. And they were angry that I would even bring that to them. So part of the problem with being a bearer of bad news is people get angry. Now, we were talking about the different reactions that people have. As a bearer of news, people get angry at you. You know the expression, don't shoot the messenger? Very often, they want to shoot the messenger. So I think part of the reason, Catherine, that most people don't want to deliver the news is because they're just scared of getting beaten up by the person you're telling the news to, you know? It's like, imagine telling somebody who you know, who's a good friend of yours, you look fat in that dress, you know, or you look too thin in that, or you look old in that, or that doesn't do you well. Now, you could do that as gently as you want. You could say that as gently as you want to your friend, but you've got to deal with consequences around that. Now, on the other hand, is the good stuff that you talk about, Sherry, that once you go through that with somebody, you become their friend. Once you don't become part of the denial, once you become part of the reality, once you say, damn, I hate that you have this illness. I'm so sorry that you do. This may be really tough. Once you're there for the person, you become a real friend, not a fake friend. What do you think?
I think you're exactly right. And if you say, I'm there for you through this process, I'll hold your hand. I'll give you information. I'll be there to take your questions. Then the person will feel that they're not alone, which can be one of the best gifts you can give someone who's suffering with a new diagnosis.
Well, let's say your friend says, I think I want to kill myself rather than go through the pain of all of this. Can you still be their friend? Tough one, right?
I could certainly offer alternatives to that.
Well, what happened to you being their friend? How about saying to them, well, you know, that's one of the good alternatives. That's one of the alternatives to consider. See, it's hard. It's hard because it presses us. We get into a spot where we can no longer just be there for them. It's one of the options.
It's true. It's what I think comes through. There's no question about it. And because we're friends, I have a vested interest in keeping that person
alive. I'd rather keep you alive and watch you go through chemo and lose your hair and rot on the inside and then go through test after test after test. I'd rather you did through that. Don't kill yourself. Jesus, that'll make me feel bad.
I would never ask someone to stay alive for my sake. But by giving the person alternatives, you know, certainly you can take your life. Certainly you can have chemotherapy.
Right.
Certainly you can have alternative therapies. These are all options
for
you.
And I think what happens when you say to a person, yes, that is an option, I think they feel closer to you.
Mm-hmm.
I think they trust you more.
Armand, I also think that grief doesn't have to turn into depression and into suicidal feelings, that these people may need to talk more regularly to somebody, to a therapist, to get rid of the anger, to get rid of the negative emotions they're feeling through talk therapy, and that maybe seeing a medical doctor is not enough for certain people, and that if they can think more positively and express themselves verbally this way, that the physical, the psychological, and the behavioral health problems associated with the diagnosis can be lessened greatly.
Well, I think, Catherine, you make a good point about one thing for sure in there. I don't know if it's about the positive attitude, but if the therapist really listens and the therapist does exactly what you're saying or what Sherry is saying, and they are saying, I am listening to you completely, and I don't have an investment in your doing one thing or another. But keep in mind, doctors do have, therapists have an investment. If the person says, I feel like killing myself, suddenly the therapist is legally responsible to do something about this. So they're not somebody you could honestly tell the truth to. So a therapist sometimes has their limitations. I think if I were a therapist, I'd tell somebody, don't ever tell me you're going to kill myself. You're going to kill yourself. Because if you do, then I'm obligated to not be honest with you, but to ring a warning bell. Do you know what I mean? So that's where we get stuck around that. So maybe, you know, you got to have one person not connected to you who you could talk to, and maybe that is the therapist. And maybe it's not. Maybe it's not.
I think the doctor learns how to give the information and maybe give the medical news or diagnosis, but it's a great forum for letting out the emotions that come up for the person who's receiving the information or the family members to have therapy, to have that talk forum, because there are a lot of feelings that come up with it that doctors aren't always skilled and haven't learned how to address.
Good idea. 212-209-2900, our number here. Certainly a loaded subject. Certainly a loaded subject, I'm sure. A lot of people have a lot of opinions about it. 212-209-2900. Difficult stuff. Difficult stuff. But I'm glad we're covering it because there's a whole world out there that refuses to talk about it. They say, oh, you talk about illness, people are going to hang up the radio. Hang up the radio. Turn off the dial. What dial? Catherine, you wanted to say 212-209-2900. We'll take your calls in just a minute. You were going to say,
yeah,
Catherine.
Yeah, well, as you were saying, Armand, it's important to have somebody to talk to. It doesn't have to be your doctor, and it doesn't have to be your therapist. It's important at some time to disclose to your family and to some close friends what you're going through. You may not be able to do that initially, but to do that can mean increased emotional supports, and they can also help you out with your financial situation, which may suffer because of your illness. So it doesn't have to mean a loss of all those things. It doesn't have to mean a loss of family support, and it doesn't have to mean a loss of financial support.
You know, finally, before we take a call, and along with what you're saying, I'd say one of the things you as a caregiver have to do as a supporter, as somebody who's a friend of somebody who's got some kind of serious illness, take stock. Take stock in yourself. Say, how far am I going to go? I heard somebody the other day who talked about the fact that he had a, she said, you know, he came to me and he had a fatal illness. So I told him, well, he's welcome to come out and stay at my house for a day. I said, what do you mean a day? How about a week? You know what I mean? And, well, you know, I have other things I have to be doing. So take stock of yourself. Maybe that's the way it is. Maybe you only have a half day or a day. But see what your limits are going to be if you're going to be a caretaker. You know, if you've got a trip planned and you're going to go off somewhere and you got somebody who may have a fatal illness and you say, well, I've got to go to France because I got a trip planned. You know, keep in mind what your priorities are. And France may be the better idea. You know? 212-209-2900. You don't get my judgment one way or another, friends. If you don't like it and you want to go differently with it, it's fine by me. If you want to not pay attention, that's okay by me. I understand. I understand. I'm not going to sit here and tell you what you should be doing. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello there. Yes, I can hear you.
You can hear me? Okay. I can't hear myself, but that's fine.
Well, none of us could hear ourselves nowadays.
Right. Well, one of the things, I practice as a dentist in Manhattan for 25 years, and one of the things that I think you've only sort of covered circumspect is the fact that medically, legally, not only do some physicians tend to soften the information, so medically, legally, they sometimes tend to make it worse than it is, and that's something, one aspect of the issue that I don't think you've...
Well, tell me about that. This isn't Victor by chance, is it?
No.
Okay, I know.
Robert is my name.
Hello, Robert.
And I have a book called Longevity Logic, but I don't want to get into that now. But,
all right, well, wait a minute. All right, thank you very much, and thank you for not wanting to get into it, but you know, I'm going to mention your book, okay. What is it about?
It's about how oral health affects general health.
Far out. You know, and I think I want to have you on a radio show.
Okay.
All right? Send me a copy of that, because, Robert, now thank you, and thank you for being selfless, which is what I appreciated. But well, now let's talk about that. You know, Sherry, have you run into this problem?
I think Robert makes a great point. I will never forget when I was doing a residency in neurology. I did a rotation in neurosurgery, and I sat with one of the neurosurgeons who told a mom about the prognosis of her baby's brain disease. And before they went to surgery, he had to explain in the most minute and painful detail all the things that could happen. And my heart was coming out of my chest. I felt, I just put myself in the place of the mom and how hard that was for her to hear it. I wondered if he had to be as detailed. I certainly understood his side of it, because he had to be covered. He had to be honest about the possibilities.
It's like the disclaimers on the drug ads that are on television. You know, oh, if you take this Prozac, then you may bleed from your toes, and you may, and you got to give all that information. It almost covers you in some way. Is that what you're talking about, Robert?
Yeah, well, I think that one of the points that you did bring out that I thought was particularly good is that the educational aspect of giving bad news. You know, you could talk about percentages, I guess, but that's, I think that some of the research has to be done by the patient receiving the information, and to provide them a way to learn for themselves, I think, is the best way to give them, you know, whatever bad news, you know, you feel is necessary.
You know, Robert, one of the things that I've never seen a physician do is a handout, and I would like to see this, is imagine a handout that said, go to your web, and it gave you a description of how you would search your illness. Like, you know, most of the stuff that I look for, I could go to Mayo Clinic, that's for sure, and they've right. always got information about stuff. But, you know, most people don't know how to do it. And one would imagine that a physician, or even a dental practice,
right.
would give somebody a sheet of paper, say, go to your web, go to this, try this, search this, and learn about it.
I think that's the, I mean, I have that a lot of that, and some of it gets dated because the web changes daily, but...
Oh, true. Okay.
But I think that is a very, very good point.
And, yeah, it's much better than giving somebody, you know, their, you know, telling them their patient's rights, I mean, or telling them where you're going to leave your bones to, you know, it's better, give them information.
I was online to check out mine in Fairway yesterday, and I don't know, this lady was started a conversation with me about health for some reason. I don't even know why. I was like exercising a little bit with my groceries with my right hand. She said, that's a good thing. I can't do that, blah, blah, blah. And she said that her physician told her that she only had a few months to live 3 years ago, but she was still around, and you know, I told her she looked good, and you know maybe she'd live along, outlive her physician. And then she says, oh, actually he died. He's a young man, but he died in a car accident. You know, not really related, but that was the point that you brought out before, that you can know only so much, and you can't, like one of your guests said, Cassandra. None of us have the Cassandra power. So information is better than trying to foretell the future.
Robert, thank you very much for calling, and do get me a copy of your book. You're a man I'd like to know. Thank
okay.
you. Thank you. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello there.
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air.
How are you?
I am fine.
Excellent, excellent. I am not a professional in that sense of the word. I'm just a common man. But after doing 14 years of Outward Bound, 6 years of a Scout Master, I think compassion and metaphor, the art of metaphor, is a good way to get bad news over to people.
Oh, what a good idea. Sure. You know, can you speak a little closer to your phone?
Okay, am I okay now?
Yeah, it's just a little bit like at a fading in and out.
Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, am I good?
Much better. Oh, so using metaphor is kind of an interesting thing. It may get a little confusing to some people, but if you have people who are responsive to it, it's a very good idea.
Well, you know, you first of all have to see, everybody's responsive to storytelling. You know, and that's part of the art of the metaphor. Do you agree?
Well, I agree, except you have to be somebody who is enough of an artist to be able to be a storyteller. I know a lot of people who can't tell a story for beans.
Because it hasn't been broken down in its correct analysis.
Yes.
To understand, you know, what it is and how to use it. You know, you can teach people to paint. There was a guy that used to come on television with the fuzzy hair. That taught people to paint over TV. So, you know, you can, it's how you break things down and whether you give people small enough bites that they can, and speak the language that they speak, whether they're a kinesthetic person or a visual or an audio, you know.
Well, now you're getting real delicate because, you know, what you're saying is very true. And if you have... Oh, I can't hear you any longer. Michael, we'll have to lose that call. I want to thank you very much for your contribution, but then you talk about a different thing, a kinesthetic, whether a person is an auditory person, a visual person, talk their language. That takes a great deal of skill learning that stuff. Certainly appreciate your attention to that. You must be a great storyteller, but you need a better phone. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take one more call. Hi, you're on the air.
Okay, good afternoon.
Hi there.
Armand, this is Ensarara.
Hey, Ensarara, how are you? Haven't spoken to you in a while.
Still between fantastic and beyond perfect.
Good.
I heard the points that you were making with you and the associates, and very quickly I noticed, wanted to bring up three points that I thought might be interesting. One, personal. When I was in the hospital with a car accident, one of the things that I found to be extremely, at least anxiety-producing for me, was not being able to get the information concerning, you know, why I was there, the medication, et cetera. That's one. Secondly, I noticed that when I watch a series called Hawthorne on TV, some of the medical programs, they're very forthright as far as giving information, you know, to the patient about what's going on. And the thought that occurred to me was, that's not the way it is in hospitals. Okay, and the last one, which hopefully I think you'll appreciate, a long time ago I read a story about a nun who was an alien, who was very, very intelligent, and her deduction eventually was that humans, because she knew everything about people, and she knew everything that was happening in their lives, and her deduction was that most people cannot take 100% of the truth. And she found that the nuns, for example, in her order, couldn't live with the fact that maybe the priests were doing certain things. So she didn't tell them. And she lived her life with us, essentially not giving us all the information, you know, since she was, I guess, somewhat omniscient, because we just couldn't handle it.
Wow, you know, it brings me to a point. I had a friend who recently had cataracts removed from his eyes. He had cataracts in both eyes, and they were removed, and they put in these perfect lenses corrected for my optic vision. Now he sees everything perfectly. And he said to me the other day, things are too perfect. He said, everything is so clear, it's almost unbearable. I miss the fuzzy. He said, I miss the little blending. He said, everything is so sharp, it's almost painful. It's like I'm removed from it. So I think maybe you're right about truth and Sarara, that maybe there's this, we have this model of this idea about what truth should be, but maybe there's a part of us that says, you know, keep it soft also. Keep it soft. Thanks for calling in, my friend. This is Armand DeMille. I want to thank my two guests, Catherine Altieri. Thank you, Catherine.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure to be here.
And of course, Sherry Siegel. I'll be back with you, my friends, tomorrow at 1 p.m. with more of this exciting stuff. Thanks so much to all of you.
Local Station Board is soliciting applications from listeners and